The week of the great American holiday has arrived, and we here at Musings on Golf have an overflowing plate of people for whom we are most thankful, including our two special guests today. On behalf of our executive producer and my great friend, Jenna Self, I am Kelly Elbin, wishing all of you a very happy Thanksgiving. Hope your Thanksgiving includes some golf, but most importantly, I hope it's filled with you being among friends, family. Yeah, there's a lot of football, et cetera, but friends and family is what this day is all about, always has been. Talking about friends and family, what we are all about here for this episode are two guests, two Jersey boys who have been friends for more than 60 years. Dennis Walters and his good friend Wayne Worms, PGA of America professional. And Wayne, in fact, calls Dennis the greatest story in the history of golf. And when I introduce Dennis, you'll hear me say the same words, and I couldn't agree more. On the back end, we'll talk about history being made at the RSM Classic on St. Simon's Island, Georgia, with Sami Välimäki becoming the first native of Finland to win on the PGA Tour. And we'll also look at others who came very close to finishing in the top 100 and therefore gaining their full PGA Tour card for 2026. And you'll hear from someone who came up short and what it meant to him not to be able to get there and how much playing on the PGA Tour means to him in general. A few things before I get into Dennis Walters. I think this is a very thankful time of year for a lot of people. Myself, I'm thankful that Bob Bupka was in my life. We lost Bob in July after a lengthy illness. As I've said before, Bob is the reason that I'm talking right now. Bob was the one who strongly recommended that we start a podcast that was originally called Musings on Sports, and then we segued into Musings on Golf, and it has been a great joy to me, and I miss him immensely. A great mentor, a great voice, and I just feel somehow Bob's spirit is still with us. He's looking down on us, and I wish he was here, but I know that that his legacy will carry on. Thankful to have such a great, wonderful friend in Janice Self, Bob's longtime partner and our executive producer. I mentioned Janice, at the outset, and I get to say the words. Janice does the hard work, right? I say the words and get out of the way, and then the producer, who actually knows what she's doing and who's done this for a long time, puts this podcast together. I love you, Janice Self. You're a wonderful friend, and looking forward to many, many more Musings on Golf with you. I'm thankful to our listeners. I'm so humbled with so many wonderful comments that people make about how much they enjoy the show and the guests, and it means so much to me. And I'm thankful for our just absolutely incredible lineup of guests that we've had in 2025, for goodness sakes, with the likes of Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, Cameron Young. It's pretty darn impressive in terms of those we've talked to and interviewed, to be able to talk to Gary Player 2 days before he turned 90, to be able to talk to Mr. Nicklaus the week of the Ryder Cup. The only thing that Jack didn't get right was the prediction, but he wasn't the only one. Cameron Young, he was fabulous, and so many other terrific guests throughout calendar year 2025, and looking forward to many, many more in 2026. You know, I mentioned family and friends. My family has gotten to know Dennis Walters. Dennis lives not far from me here in South Florida. And both my kids, Megan and Ryan, when they were growing up, got to know Dennis. And Ryan in particular spent some time with Dennis. And it's just a unique experience. My sister Nancy, over the summer, met Dennis at the U.S. Adaptive Open outside of Washington, D.C. My brother Max, who was here a month or so ago, actually went to Dennis's house with me and watched Dussie, Dennis's dog, golf balls with a plastic golf club. And there aren't any other dogs hitting golf balls in the world. And to be able to see what Dennis has done is nothing short of remarkable. And it really has been for Dennis, very, very much about family and friends. In the interview, you'll hear he talks a lot about his late father, Bucky, and rightfully so. It was his dad who pushed him, literally pushed him and said, look, if you're, you know, after he was paralyzed from the horrific golf cart accident, if you're going to try to get on with things, I've got some ideas. And ultimately led to Dennis with this swivel seat on a golf cart and being able to hit balls just with his upper body. His sister Barbara, who just a wonderful friend and set up so many of his 3,500 plus trick shot shows, 3,500 trick shot shows, right? Great friends like Wayne Worms, PGA of America professional. They grew up in New Jersey, got to know one another when they were just kids and have stayed very, very close through the years. I mentioned about Dennis, and he is the most inspirational person I've ever met. And I thought it to sort of give you some context before we go into the interview. In 2007, Dennis, along with a terrific writer, Jim Achenbach, who unfortunately since then has passed away, they combined to write the book called In My Dreams, I Walk With You. And as I was reading through the book the other night, I thought it was interesting to just give you a sense of what life is like for Dennis Walters every morning. Now, granted, this was written 18 years ago, but I think it still applies today. So in the area that he talks about his day-to-day life, I'm going to read this to you. In order for me to get out of bed in the morning, I push down hard on my right elbow in order to prop myself up. This helps me get my balance, and then I start shimmying on my butt over to my wheelchair, which is parked on the right side of my bed. I slide onto the chair and then, one by one, grab hold of my legs. Since they are dead weights, I have to use both of my hands to lift them one at a time and carefully put them on the footrest of the wheelchair. If they are not balanced just right, they may slip off, and because I have no feeling in them, I might roll over with them with the chair. Once I am all set in the chair, Benji Hogan, that was his dog at the time, jumps on my lap as we head out of the bedroom. I have to, quote, pop a wheelie to get down the one small step that leads to the screened-in porch. I then open the porch and let Benji out. He does what he has to do and is back inside in record time. This whole procedure takes about 20 minutes. Compare that to the time that it takes you to get up, go to the bathroom, and then go back in your room. 5 minutes, maybe? That would be about right for me. That would probably be about right for a lot of people, maybe less time. I've known Dennis a long, long time. The only time I ever heard Dennis Walters complain, and it was justified. He talked a lot one time about not seeing people with disabilities in television ads and as much on TV as he felt that should be the case. It's the only time I've ever heard him complain. Makes a lot of sense, whether from a commercial standpoint or just from a human standpoint. And spent a lot of time in this interview with Dennis, not so much about his act, about the show, but about the people in his life and what Thanksgiving means to him. And so pleased to have Wayne. We started a little tradition last year with David Kent, PGA of America professional, and his son Noah. They were our guests at Thanksgiving 2024. Noah had been the runner-up in the U.S. Amateur in 2024. And I thought it was a really sweet time together with the two of them. This one is even higher level, and I am honored to have spent the time with Dennis and with Wayne Worms, and you will hear that powerful Thanksgiving interview and message from both of them, quite honestly, right after you hear from our friends at Titleist and William and Harry.
Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are the best performing, most consistent in the game. So how does the best get better? You start by listening to the best players in the world. You experiment, iterate, validate. You trust the best process to create the best golf ball the game has ever known. The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. More speed off the tee, more control with your irons, more spin with the wedges, and more opportunity to shoot your lowest scores.
America, this is your moment. Liam and Harry's limited edition spirit shoe is here so every fan can feel like part Team USA from the first tee to the final putt. Two head-turning designs, premium deerskin, 100% waterproof with spikeless grip and all-day comfort. Limited run, don't sit this one out. Pre-buy now at williamandharry.com. Get into spirit. Get into comfort. In one of the many accounts that have been written about Dennis Walter's remarkable life, his great friend, PGA of America professional Wayne Worms, said that Dennis's, quote, is the greatest story in the history of golf. It's true. And it's true because of the lowest of lows that Dennis endured amid the heartbreak of a dream that was shattered after a golf cart accident in the summer of 1974 cost him the use of his lower body. And it's true because of the highest of heights that Dennis has scaled in his extraordinary voyage, which has included more than 3,500 trick shot golf shows and a message about dreams that has resonated from Augusta National Golf Club all the way to St. Andrews Golf Links. At this time of year, as we pause to give thanks and reflect, we at Musings on Golf are honored to give thanks for and welcome to this very special episode a member of the World Golf Hall of Fame and most recently, PGA Hall of Fame, Dennis Walters, and his dear friend of more than 60 years, Wayne Worms. Dennis, my friend, first of all, welcome. And Dennis, just on behalf of a lot of people, thank you for what you have meant to golf and to so many whose lives you have touched.
Well, good morning, Kelly. I am honored to be with you and my buddy Wayne during this week of Thanksgiving. And I think this is a wonderful opportunity for me, especially because of the recent induction into the PGA Hall of Fame. But everybody the last couple of weeks, they've just talked about me and what I've done. And that's terrific. That's just great, especially because it's coming from your peers. But what I want to spend the majority of my time during this interview is I want to give thanks for all the things that have been given to me. And I also want to say that golf has given me a lot, enabled me to do a lot of things, but I think the scales are unbalanced. I think golf has given me far more than I've given it. And if I can give back a little bit, and continue to give back more, then that really pleases me because it's meant so much to me. And I know I have a good story. I wish more people heard it because I think that what I've tried to do, and it took me a little while to realize it, which I'll get into later, but I think that the game of golf, it can have a tremendous positive influence on your life. And I'm trying to show people with my show and with what I do, what's possible. What's possible in golf? And equally as important, what's important in life? And I'm really looking forward to not talking about things I've done, but things I'm grateful for and things that I am happy that have happened and some of the things I'd like to see happen in the future.
Those are great thoughts. Thank you. I'm delighted to hear that. Wayne, I suppose you're not surprised to hear words like that from your good friend.
No, I'm not, because he's 100% correct. You know, we have a lot to be thankful for. I mean, just I'm so thankful that I'm involved in golf. And I've been a PGA professional, as you mentioned, I was, and almost 50 years coming up, a couple years. And I've done so many things because of golf. And being with Dennis, I mean, good night. I've been thinking a lot about that. I mean, he's introduced me to people that I never would have met, been to places I've never would have been if it wasn't for Dennis. And we've had a lot of fun along the way, and I'm very thankful for that, for sure. No question.
Dennis, you have to be thankful and grateful for this friendship that you've had with your buddy here. I mean, you told me you were 12 and he was 9 when you first knocked heads back in Jersey back in the day. And here you are together on this podcast on a beautiful Florida day. I'm older where Wayne is, by the way, up in New Jersey. That's okay. That has to be on, Dennis, has to be on your list of things you're thankful for, that you're grateful for.
No question about it. I really have a small circle, and I count Wayne in there. I mean, I believe this is my recollection of the whole thing is the first time I saw him, he was ball hawking in the woods at Jumping Brook with his dad. And that's where I was hanging out. And then later on, he started coming up over there. But it's a very small circle that I have. I'm grateful for that because it's hard to find good friends, lifelong friends. And if you have a few of them, you're very fortunate. You're very lucky. And you know, guys like Bob Ford, Duke Butler, Wayne, my buddy Russ Holden, a few other guys. They're all golf guys, and they're all great friends of mine, dear friends of mine. And these are people you, if you get in trouble, you can count on them. And you know, it's something to really be thankful for and to be grateful for, and that's. I've met a lot of people, and I've met and I consider them friends, but this small circle is really special to me.
Yeah, and so much of your life and that circle as it developed, Dennis, was around your dad, Bucky, who is no longer with us, and I know meant everything to you. From kicking you in the rear end after the accident to getting the golf cart to reaching out to Mr. Nicholas to say, hey, you're a dad as well. I've got a son here who needs some help. You know, I write the questions for this in advance I wanted to talk about Jack, but could you talk a little bit about your dad, Bucky?
Well, of all the things I'm grateful for, my mom and dad are at the top of the list. Also, my sister, Barbara. And without them, I'm pretty sure I couldn't have done this. Our mom stayed home, did all the foundation work for our family. And my sister helped out. She even went on the road with me for a little while. But my dad... He was the one I spent all the time with. He went on the road with me for 17 years. And so at the top of my list, my family is number one. I'm not certain, but if they get the internet in heaven, it's a real upset. My dad could figure out which button to push, but if he can figure it out, I'm sure they're listening. But yeah, I mean, my dad was—he was in the infantry in World War II. He was in North Africa. Then he went to Sicily. Then he went to Anzio. Then he went to Monte Cassino. He went to Rome, Switzerland, and Berlin. And there was a story written about me by Adam Shupak, and in there. He said I don't know how he found this because I didn't say anything, but he said my dad was in the 34th Infantry, which I looked up and it had their logo was a red bull. And I've seen that on some of his army stuff. And it said that the 34th Infantry was the second most division involved in combat, 610 days. And I'm going, oh my. And, you know, my dad didn't really talk about it much, but he a couple of tidbits here and there. But I'm telling you, what he went through was amazing. And he instilled in me all the effort that it must have taken to fight. I mean, this is like a lot of hand-to-hand combat and hand grenades and bunkers and all this kind of stuff. And it's pretty scary in the movies. But when you actually live through it, I'll never be as good as my dad. Right? I'm not that far off, but there's no possible way that I could have done that. And so a lot of the lessons I learned to fight paralysis came from my dad. These are his favorite things he used to instill in me. The first was, he said, I'm a stupid person, meaning himself. He said, because I never learned to spell the word can't. He also said, you can't do anything good with a bad attitude. He also said, the only person that can keep you from accomplishing what you want to do is you. And the other one was, if you want to get good at something like golf or at painting or anything, he said, hang out with other people who are really, really good at it and keep your mouth shut, ears open, and listen, and pretty soon, perhaps you'll be good at it. So all these life lessons were discussed in a minivan as we crisscrossed America. I've probably traveled close to air miles, driving miles. I tried to calculate it, and it's probably around 3 million miles. And most of these miles, especially every mile, the first 17 years was with my dad. So I'm very grateful for my family and all the great things they've done for me. And I think that's a foundation for success. If you have a good family upbringing, I think you're way ahead of the game, especially today.
Wayne, you knew Bucky very well, and he really was his son's greatest cheerleader, not just someone who traveled with him, but promoted him. Tell me your perspective of Dennis's father. I think it's important in the context of what we're talking about here.
Well, do you remember the things that I remember about Bucky is pretty much what Dennis said. And a lot of the things that Dennis said, I use to pass on to my students, especially the one that says, can't spell the word can't. Okay. I use that all the time. I also use the one that nothing good comes from a bad attitude. I tell that to my golfing kids all the time. So Bucky also has influenced me. But I remember Bucky always had in his back pocket, he had a bunch of brochures that he would always pass out to anybody who would listen to him. He'd pass them out to anybody. He said, this is my son. Take a look at this, you know? And he always called Dennis Doc, too. I never figured out why, but he always called him Doc. Let's go hit a few balls, you know? Doc, let's get going, you know? But Bucky was an influence to me also, like I said, and I'm so fortunate and so lucky that I had a chance to spend time with him for sure.
Well, Dennis, you've been so fortunate and so lucky as well to have Jack Nicklaus in your life. It was really neat to see the video that you shared with me of Jack and Barbara narrating your induction into the Hall of Fame beautiful video that the PGA of America produced. And because of your dad, right? Jack was the one who got you started with the financing and the promotion of your shows through McGregor. Isn't that right, Dennis?
That's correct. And one last thing about my dad. When he passed away in the hospital, he had these brochures on his desk there, or nightstand. and he was passing them out till the end. But when I was in the hospital for 4 months. I was in rehab for 4 months, and the last month you could go home. So I went home, and I was watching the Bing Crosby tournament, which ironically was from Pebble Beach, which 50 years later, I was inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame at Pebble Beach. But anyhow, I'm watching this tournament, and I'm watching, I'd gotten to the finals of the Q School, and I missed it, but I wanted to try again when I had the accident. And a lot of my friends were playing in this tournament. They were rookies on tour or second year, and they were guys I'd played with in college, and all the guys that you would know from my era. And I was crying my eyes out. And he goes, "Come on, champ, let's go hit some golf balls." I said, "How do you reckon I'm going to do that out of that blanking wheelchair?" And if you knew my dad, you could figure out what the word was. It ends in ing and it rhymes with luck. So anyhow, we went over there, and I won't go into the entire story because I'll use up all the time. Anyhow, he encouraged me to do it. And then I started where I could hit the ball okay from the wheelchair. Then I went to Florida. Then we developed the swivel seat that was on the passenger side of the golf cart. It actually started out as a bar stool. And then we had two prototypes. The seat that's on my cart right now in my garage is 50 years old, and it still works. And so then that was the summer of 76. And there were three golf courses in New Jersey that had benefit tournaments for me. And I said to my dad, I said, "Why don't we go back and show him that I'm playing golf again?" He said, "Hey, champ, that's a great idea." So I said, okay. So we went and did it. And the first two, I just got up there and hit balls off the first tee. But the third one, I remembered when I was a kid, I saw Paul Hahn Sr. do a trick. He was the most famous trick shot guy in the 50s and 60s. And I said to my dad, "Can you make me a 3 foot high tee?" "Sure." So I hit off the 3 foot high tee, and I got a much better reaction. And then I got a film from the PGA showing Paul Hahn doing his show. And I figured I could do that one. I couldn't do that one. Forget it. No. Yes, I know I could. So I picked out a few of them. I was fooling around in the back of the range for the birds, the squirrels, and the trees. And another one of my great mentors, Gary Wyron, got me a show at the 1977 PGA show. I did it with Toski and Flick. And I never thought I could make a career out of it. But I figured, what the heck? I was in such a bad spot. As rotten as I felt every place else, when I came to the golf course, I felt better. Plus, for me personally, I knew it was far better medicine than any pill I could take. And I took these pills they were giving me. I threw them in the lake, and I just started, you know, playing golf and working on this thing. But it was never, "Oh man, I want to be the world's greatest trick shot golfer." No, I was killing time. I was living with my parents, zero income, and you know. I came home once from the rehab center, and I punched a hole. I was so mad. I punched a hole in the wall of their condo. And my dad was, that was one of the few times he really got mad at me, you know. But anyhow, I was going nowhere fast. People, no. My dad called every golf course, I think, in America. No one would hire me. Every once in a while, he'd scrape one up. So after a few years of this, I was getting really better, though. I was really practicing a lot. And so he did write a letter to Jack Nicklaus, who was involved with McGregor, and they hired me. And the good part about it was, they signed me to a contract. It was for $25,000, which was way more than I had made. But that wasn't really the important part about it. There was the validation that they thought I was actually doing something good. And they sent me everywhere. I went to junior tournaments. I went to the Memorial Tournament. Jack introduced me with all the other pros, just like I was one of the pros on that Tuesday clinic where they each hit a club. And he comes out, he said, "I saved the best for last." I'm going, "Oh my God." This was the most nervous I've ever been, because Byron Nelson was there in the front row, Patty Berg, Jack. And luckily for me, the wind was blowing like 30 miles an hour, straight downwind. All I had to do was get it in the air and it would go. And but that was my real break, because I got other sponsors from them. I got other shows from them. And that's really when it became a career.
So pleased to be talking with Dennis Walters and PGA of America professional Wayne Worms here on this special Thanksgiving episode of Musings on Golf. Hey, Wayne, you know, before there was the Dennis Walters show, before there was this guy who was Jack was introducing, and he's doing episode shows with Tiger, and he was just your buddy, right? Who played collegiately. Dennis played collegiately at North Texas State. I've read about what you said about how good of a player Dennis was. So how good was Dennis, and in what areas of the game was he particularly sharp?
Well, like you said, Kelly, he was a very, very good player, excellent player. When I think about Dennis in those days, I think about the fact that he was a skinny guy. He was like 130 pounds, something like that. One of us should call a skinny cat, okay? And he'd come over to Manasquan where I was, and he'd hit balls every day. And I'd watch him hit balls, and it was unbelievable. He had such a smooth swing, but boy, at the bottom, he could really hit it. He had a gift, and he still has that gift. He has a very late release. In other words, he can really generate a lot of speed. And I remember seeing him hit the old ball, the old Velotta ball with the steel shafted wood head. We'd out there hit drivers all the time off the 16th hole at Manasquan. And I go out there the next day and measure some of them. He hit the ball like, you know, close to like 290. Okay. He could really hit the ball. He just had a gift. He had a late release. That's something you can't teach. That's something you're born with. So his ball striking was incredible. He could hit that ball beautifully. And he just loved to play. Okay. He loved to play. That's all he wanted to do was play golf. And he wanted to play in tournaments. He wanted to get better. Like I said, he worked really, really hard on his game, kept himself in shape. I remember he would tell me stories over to Hollywood where there was a light by the putting green. He'd be putting till like midnight. Okay. And those stories go around. And that's why at that time, he was a heck of a player. That's all I could tell you. And I really believe the fact that he would have gotten to the Hall of Fame as a player and not where he is at an ambassador category, okay? Because he was that good and he had that much talent, but more importantly, he had a tremendous amount of desire and incredible.
Okay, so Wayne, forward it now to all of these trick shot shows and all the shots and all the practiced shots that he's hit, just being able to use the upper part of his body from a technical standpoint. I'm going to ask you, how'd he do it?
Well, like I said, he's got a lot of talent. Okay, he was blessed with a lot of talent and very good hand-eye coordination. One of the things about working with Dennis and being with Dennis for all these years, you realize how important the arms and hands are in the swing, okay? And the way I start off my players, we learn how to, you know, set up to the ball correctly with a good grip, good posture, alignment. We teach them all that. But more importantly, I teach them how to use their hands, how to release the golf club properly with their hands. Because most people don't talk about that anymore. They're too busy pushing off the ground and doing all this other stuff. But you got to learn how to hit the ball first with using your hands. And with Dennis was a perfect example. We always used to talk about the fact that the body responded to the swinging of the arms. Because when Dennis just swung his arms and he came to the ball, his seat swiveled. So you can see that the seat moved because of the momentum created by his arm swing. And the fact that Dennis did have a lot of speed, and he still has a lot of speed for his age. I kid him like that all the time. But he still has a lot of speed. But again, the speed of his arms and hands made him move his body, okay? So we always just used to talk about the fact that the swinging of the arms moves the body. And even today, Dennis and I always talk about his make sure he gets a good windup so he can get a good speed with his arms and hands. When he does that, he hits the ball really good. But you got to learn how to use your arms and hands first. And Dennis is a perfect example of that, for sure. I remember talking to Bob Ford one day about that, and Bob also told me the same thing. This is what I'm trying to teach my players, okay? You got to learn how to use your hands and arms, and that's overlooked today as far as I'm concerned in the teaching area.
So, Dennis, the swinging of the arms moves the body. I've watched you hit many practice shots. I've seen your shows as well. Did that the movement of the hands, all of that, did that take you to sync up to become and be able to hit ball the way you've hit it all through the years? It could not have been right away. It had to be a period of time.
Well, yeah, it took a while to try to figure it out because no one else had done this before. And so I had, I had to figure it out for myself, and Wayne helped me a lot. And it was actually, as bad as it was actually kind of interesting because we were like explorers. We were trying to figure out how to do it. And a lot of it had to do with the seat. The seat moves. I can't move the seat with my legs, but when my right arm gets past the ball and straightens out, it moves the seat, which I think helps save my back. I've hit millions of golf balls, and I've never had a pain in my back because I think it's the pressure is taken off because my seat moves. And so we did learn a lot. We learned a lot about the golf clubs. We made golf clubs all one summer trying. This is when graphite shafts first came out. And we had Wayne's boss, John Caffone. We called him Mr. John. He used to make clubs from scratch. And so we tried to make the clubs longer, but you could hardly get a graphite shaft. You couldn't use the shaft for a plug. So he took some hickory from the old wooden shafted clubs and he put them in the shaft to extend the shaft, which I needed. That was one thing we figured out right away. And then if he tried to take a shaft out, there was nobody knew how to take the graphite shaft out without destroying it. But he put a plastic bag around it and put it in a pot of boiling water, and we called it graphite soup. And you got the shaft out. Then we put it in another head. So all of this was interesting. And I remember those days well.
Well, Dennis, I've marveled at how you've trained your dogs. And even to this day with Gussie, and I know he was right with you when you accepted the award from the installment into the PGA of America Hall of Fame. I've heard a lot of your stories, and I want to ask about the rescue dogs in general in a second. But I've heard a lot of your stories. Please tell the story again of Tiger Woods coming off the elevator and then the eventual race with your dog. That is, to me, one of the classic stories I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's a beauty. I did 30 clinics with Tiger. The first one was at Disney World, and I knew the pro at Disney World, and he said, why don't you come up and volunteer? There's going to be like thousands of kids here for this new guy, Tiger Woods. This is the spring of 97. And so I said, yeah, it's a good idea. I like big crowds. And I said, I've never seen this guy. I want to see him in person for myself. So Wayne went with me. We're like 10 feet away from Tiger while he's warming up. And we're going, after he hits about 10, 15 shots, we're going, wow, this guy's way better than everybody else. And so when we got done, Tiger and his father, Earl Woods, they came over to me and they liked what I did. And they said, we're going all over America. Would you like to go with us? And I go, yeah, sign me up. So I was the opening act, and there are 5,000 kids at these clinics, all in like bleachers behind you on both sides. And it was really exciting because I would get there. I knew Tiger was getting there, what time he was getting there. Like the show would start at like maybe 10 or 11, and he'd get there an hour before, and I'd watch him, and he'd watch me hit a few. I'd watch him hit a lot of shots, and I'm going, wow, this is amazing. And so I was right there in the beginning. It was really cool. And so one time we were in Cincinnati, and we were staying at this hotel. Everybody usually stayed in the same hotel. And so we were on this one on one floor. It had really long corridors, as I remember, maybe like 40 yards, 30, 40 yards. And so everyone was racing my dog, Benji Hogan, who was really fast, and no one could beat him, of course. So Tiger coming off the elevator, and he's wearing an Armani coat, Gucci loafers. And so he goes, "What's going on?" And I'm right there. I'm at the finish line. My sister is at the start line. And I said, "Everyone's trying to beat Benji, but no one can beat him." He says, "I'll try." So he went to his room. It was at the end of the hall, just past, not too far past the finish line. So he put his coat down on the bed, left the door open, thankfully. And he went back to the start line. And so we go, 1, 2, 3, go. And my dog is off like a flash. And Tiger slips, right? He's in these loafers. So he says, "You know, my dog is at the finish line. He barely started. He slipped." And so he says, "I want a do-over." I said to him, "How many do-overs have you ever gotten on a PGA Tour?" Right? So finally, he took his shoes off. And he's in his stocking feet. And okay, so we said, "All right, we'll do it again. 1, 2, 3, go." My dog wins by like three or four lengths, right? And Tiger kept going. And because the door was open, he ran and he flopped on his bed. But if he hadn't left the door open, he might have had some sort of major injury. But anyhow, that was cool. I wish I had a video of that, but yeah. I think it was before cell phones and, but it was cool. And I got to see a lot of other cool things with him, and I would watch him warm up, and every single time, almost without fail, he would aim at a sign or a golf cart or so, and he would always hit it.
Wow.
He would always hit whatever he was aiming at. Not every single time, but he would always hit it. And then he would hit he'd be like 150 yards away from his target, and he'd hit like five clubs, right? Or he would be like 210 away, and he would hit five clubs. He'd hit like a really hard 6 iron, a hard 5 iron, a smooth 4, an easy 3, and a big high balloon cut, and would just sit on a green like nothing. I mean, it was... But, you know, just watching that stuff up close with nobody else was there was really cool.
Absolutely. All of your dogs have been rescue dogs, right?
I've had, this is another thing. It's at the top of my thankfulness list and gratitude list during Thanksgiving. I've had 5 dogs, all rescues. And, I was not too long after my accident, I was really down. And I said to my mom, I said, "I think I'm going to get a dog." She goes, "Great idea." So I said, "I want to rescue one." So we went down to this rescue place, and Wayne was with me. It was the Broward County Humane Society. And so I became friendly with the gal down there, and she said, "Come out every Tuesday. That's when we put out the new dogs." So every Tuesday morning, I went, and like for a month or two. And finally, I go in there, and she goes, "I got the dog for you." And then Wayne went looking in the cages, and he said, "I found the dog." So we went in the little room. It was a trailer back then, like a little... It's very small. Now it's a big building. And she brings the dog in, and Wayne goes, "Hey, that's the one I picked out." So that was my first dog, Muffin. And so I've since had 4 others. And in every show, I leave this message. If you're looking for a dog or a cat, an animal shelter or rescue group is a great place to begin your search. And so every time I needed a dog, that's how I did it. And in the beginning, you had to go to the dog pounds and the animal shelters in person. And now you can just go on the internet. You can find a dog in Seattle if you're looking. And So the other four I've had, I trained them to be service dogs, which when I first started doing it, nobody even knew what that was. And then I trained them all to be service dogs, which means the real definition of their job is they pick up things that I can't reach. And that's in the law, the ADA law. That's picking up dropped items. So they're legit. And that means they can be with me 24 hours a day. I'm never separated from my dog. And I've gone into the hospital and my dog went with me. But that, to me, has been a real gift, just the fact to have them. And then I've trained them all to be the opening act in the show. And I've taught each one's different. Like Bucky could walk on his legs, back legs, the length of my driveway. He walked across the Swilkin Bridge and the Hogan Bridge on his back legs. And I have videos and pictures of that. And then now Gussie, he can't do that. His legs, Bucky's legs were a lot bigger in the back. But Gussie, I tried to teach Gussie that, but he couldn't do it. But I taught him to hit a golf ball. And he's actually hit 7 drives off the first tee at Augusta National. So my dog has that going for him, which is nice. So
yeah, I have to tell you, my brother Max was here a month or so ago, and we went over and visited Dennis, and to see Gussie, to see a dog hit a golf shot. Wayne, I know you've taught a lot of people, but for a man to teach a dog how to hit a shot is simply remarkable. I literally have never seen anything like it.
Well, I use that video all the time to show my students. Okay. I say, look, if dog can do it, you can do it. And I put it in slow motion. It's pretty good. And it's really funny. It's really funny. And hits it straight too. It hits it straight. So that's a good thing.
Having a really special time talking with World Golf Hall of Fame member Dennis Walters and his wonderful 60-year friend, PGA of America professional, Wayne Worms. Wayne, I want to ask Dennis this as well, but clearly there was a point for Dennis where it shifted from, I'm doing these trick shot shows for me, to, wow, I can start to see how I'm making an impression in a very positive way on people. Having been around Dennis a long time, did you notice that? Did you notice a change over at some point where it was, oh my goodness, this is bigger than just a guy who is unusual in the shots he's hit, that this is a much larger message?
I've seen it in action, okay? And one story, hopefully I can get through this story. We were in Florida, and we were hitting balls at a golf course, and one of the members of the club was watching. Dennis hit balls, she said, I got to go get my husband. I said, why? He said, well, he was a great player. He's a former club champion, won a bunch of club championships here. He's a very, very good player, and he got a stroke. And now he's lost all of his interest in golf, and he's become like a recluse, and he has just not himself anymore. So I said, I got to go get him, and I got him to watch this. So she drove off in her golf cart and came back. And sure enough, he watched Dennis hit balls. And we walked to the other end of the range. Dennis must talk to him for over an hour. Okay. Must talk to him over an hour. And so then he got back on the cart and he left. Well, that was one winter. Now, the following winter, when I was back in Florida, I ran into his wife in a parking lot at the Publix. And she said, I remembered her and she remembered me. And I said, how's it going? She says, I want you to know this. He said, that meeting that he had, that my husband had with Dennis, not only changed his life, but made our life better, made my children's life better, and made my grandchildren's life better, just because of that time with Dennis. And that kind of sums it up pretty good right there. Okay, so you can see he has an influence on people. Every time I tell that story, I always get a little teary.
But you made it through there beautifully. That's just such a powerful story. And Dennis, there have been a lot of powerful stories. And I'll ask you sort of the same question. Was there for you a moment, a time, what have you, where you began to understand that what you were doing had a bigger message, that your talks about dreams and I cannot say the word can't, and all the life lessons that you were preaching was becoming even more important than the act itself.
I have the answer to that, but I just want to say it was 8-1 and he was going to cry.
Worried so.
Yeah.
Oh, he did so.
I know. Anyhow, but that's him. That's my boy. That's my buddy Wayne. And, but anyhow, to answer your question, when I first started doing this, I did it all for myself. I was just trying to cope with what I honestly considered to be a hopeless situation. It was totally hopeless. Everything I wanted to do was right down the drain. What am I going to do? So when I started doing these shows, and I didn't realize this in the very, very, very beginning, but it didn't take me long. But right from the very beginning, people were telling me I was giving them hope, encouragement, and inspiration. And I later, very shortly after that, came to believe these are three of the most precious gifts you can give anyone. You give somebody hope, that's a big deal. And so I'm happy I've been able to make the best. I think I maxed out on what was possible in this horrible situation. And so that makes me happy that I was able to do it. I was able to hang in there. I didn't give up. I didn't quit. And the thing that's even better is, yeah, okay, I did it for myself, but along the way, I've been able to help others, and that's made it even better. Because, yeah, I hit great shots. I really do. I still hit the ball good. Yeah. And I've hit a lot of these great shots. And for me, when it counted, because, like, I couldn't do it in tournaments until about 4 years ago. So these golf shows were my tournaments. And as soon as I'd get done, my dad would go 68, 70, 71. You know, he'd tell me how he thought I did. And so, and I have all these bad jokes, okay? But the underlying theme, the underlying message of the whole thing is basically, and I hear a lot of people have talked about dreams, which I think is good because it is good to have a dream. Where I differ is I encourage every show I do. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to prove with every swing I make that golf can be a game for everyone and people with disabilities. I mean, before, I'm happy to be a pioneer in this field because the only groups that had adaptive golf were the blind and the amputees. They've had them since the war. But if you're in a wheelchair, forget it. And so people in a wheelchair now have a chance to play golf and experience the joy golf can bring to their life. I'm really super proud of that. And so in addition to all of this, I'm encouraging people to reach for their dreams, strive for excellence, and do something positive in their life they didn't think they could do. And I'm also reminding them with great vigor, if you have a dream and it doesn't work out, that's okay, because the solution is simple. Get a new dream. And so I think that's what I did. And I think it's good advice.
We're going to have some closing thoughts in a minute, but let's take what you said about adaptive a step further. You have to be extremely thankful to the United States Golf Association for the USGA starting the Adaptive Open, 4 years ago? And as you said, recognizing and providing an opportunity, people in wheelchairs, et cetera, to not only play the game in a big forum, but play it competitively. I mean, you won the seeded category in the first one. Is that correct?
That is correct.
How much did that mean to you?
Well, I hadn't played in a golf tournament in 48 years. And I went 51 years between USGA appearances. I played in the amateur when I was in college. I finished tied for 11th when it was medal play. And I went 51 years before my next USGA appearance. So, yeah. I'm grateful very grateful to the USGA. They gave me the Bob Jones Award, where Jack and Barbara were my presenters. And so I'm very grateful for them, but I'm very, very grateful for them for starting this tournament. And listen, for people in playing adaptive golf, tournament golf is, it's not the biggest thing. To me, the biggest thing is to get more people involved. That's the real goal. And for the elite people that really want to play in a national open, wow, that's cool. That's really great. And one of the things along the lines of this subject is my disappointment with the PGA Tour in not having anything at all to do with adaptive golf. Now, the European Tour, they have adaptive golfers at a lot of their tournaments where they play with the pros and all this kind of stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, why wouldn't the PGA Tour want to be involved in this? It's in the U.S., the National Open, there's 96 people and there's 96 fantastic stories. And why the PGA Tour seemingly to me only wants to talk about money and gambling and making the field smaller. To me, if they would get behind us in adaptive golf, it would grow exponentially. And yet, they don't want to have anything to do with it. And that, I don't have a whole lot of disappointments in golf, but that's one of them.
And I know the 2026 U.S. Adaptive Open will return to Woodmont Country Club outside of the nation's capital. And did they ever do that up well last year? Well, this year, Janice,
right? Phenomenal golf course, phenomenal club. They opened us with open arms, and it really felt like we were really welcome there. The course was immaculate, and it was a real national open, and it was fantastic. And I'm so happy we're going back there again this year. It's a wonderful event just to see how people have adapted and how they've come up with ways to play golf like I have. And in my opinion, it's a very overlooked story, and it needs more coverage, and it needs for people of influence to get behind it, like the PGA Tour. We should be doing things at a lot of these events because it's life changing for the people involved. And it has wide-ranging ramification. Look, if you're in a wheelchair, playing golf's not the most important thing in the world, but if you want to do it, it's important. And the cool part about it is if you try something that you never thought you could do and you do it, then you go on to try other things. You meet other people, and it's a great way. I'm always talking about growing the game, and it's usually involving juniors. And I think this is a phenomenal way to grow the game because when you say the word disabilities, it encompasses all kinds of things that millions of people suffer from. And if they got out on the golf course and got out in the fresh air, the sunshine with their friends, they forget about their troubles. Far better medicine than any pill you can take.
Guys, as we close, Dennis started out of talking about how he wanted this conversation to be focused on how thankful he was. So as we close, Wayne, I'll start with you. I wonder if you maybe give me a sense of not only what Thanksgiving means to you, but more in particular, the context of your great friend, Dennis Walters, what he's done with his life and the thanks that what you have for everything that you've experienced and been part of with a guy who, at the lowest of lows, is a member of the World Golf Hall of Fame, is the Bob Jones Award winner, on and on. How do you put that into context for this week of Thanksgiving?
Well, Kelly, I'm very thankful for the fact that Dennis is in my life, for sure. Okay, I mean, if he hadn't gotten hurt and had his accident, I probably would not have had this relationship with him because he would have been out there winning PGA Tour events and senior tour events, and we probably would never gotten together. But So I'm very thankful for our friendship. I mean, like I said, he has taught me so much. Okay. And, you know, we've helped each other a lot of times through some tough times, and we've been in the foxhole together many times. Okay. And I can't thank him enough. And, I mean, it's amazing. I've been watching this guy hit balls out of a cart for so many years since the beginning. And I'm still amazed when I watch him hit it. It's unbelievable. To the point I call him the human testing machine. You know, I have the Iron Byron up at a golf house, you know. They can have Dennis up there. He doesn't ever miss. It's that little baby draw every time he hits. It's absolutely amazing. And I'm still, I just can't believe it when I watch him. So the mere fact that he's been in my life for all these years as a very, very dear friend for over 60 years, as you said, I am so thankful for that. I am so thankful that he has shown me a lot, taught me a lot, inspired me a lot, introduced me to a lot of people I've never would have met before. And you know, the bottom line is we've had a heck of a good time doing it. We've had a lot of fun trying to figure things out. Like Dennis said earlier, trying to figure out what he needed to do. It's been a lifelong experiment, and we're still experimenting. We're still having fun with it. And, you know, we talk to each other at least once or twice a day, every day. We don't miss. He'll call me from the driving range sometimes. I'm hitting the ball like this. What do you think about that? What do you think about this? No, and we still do that, just like we've done over the years. He's an incredible person. I mean, he is the genesis of adaptive golf. People don't have to understand that. If it wasn't for Dennis Walters, we wouldn't have had all this stuff that's going on with people in wheelchairs and things and getting people out of the golf course, like he said. I'm so thankful that I was part of that. This very small part, by the way, extremely small part, but looking from the outside. But I'm so thankful to be in golf, and I'm so thankful to be associated with Dennis Walters.
Dennis, early on, you talked about a small group of friends that have been with you, and Wayne certainly is at the top of that list. And I'm wondering that kind of the same question in the context of that friendship and the things that you're thankful for, particularly this week. And Dennis, look, I think we all think about, you know, parents and those who aren't with us, right? What's Thanksgiving mean to you? And particularly in the context of the friends you have, both Wayne and those who are here and those who are no longer with us.
Well, I think it is. For the most part, it is about your family, your friends, the people you meet along the way, the relationships you have. And I think that I'm extremely lucky that I have. Wayne has been in my life. He's helped me with a lot of things, and I've helped him with a lot of things. And so all my close friends are very close, and I'm very grateful for that. And it leads to the experiences that you have in life. Without those types of relationships, your life is empty. And but if you have good family and good friends, your life is enriched by so many times over. So it's just really the basics, the foundations of any good life, I think, are based on the people you hang out with. And I'm happy I got to hang out with Wayne for all these years and all my other buddies and my dogs. My whole adult life, I've spent 24 hours with a dog, except when I don't have them. And one of my favorite things is, and see, I'm different like that. That's my closest family. I mean, my sister lives around the corner, but you know what? And it sounds kind of weird, but you know, they're a big part of my life. And one of my favorite things I've ever heard is that it goes like this: God sent dogs to earth without wings so people would not know they're angels. And I think that's true. I mean, there's no tension in my house. There's no drama. It's like, what do you want to do? No, what I don't know. What do you want to do? You know, it's like whatever I do makes my dog happy, and whatever he does makes me happy. So I'm lucky that I have golf. I have a I have dogs. I have friends. And you know what? I missed out a lot on in life. I got shortchanged in a lot of ways, but somehow I figured it out, what actually does make me happy. And this, something like this happens to you, you can go either way. And I just made up my mind. I wasn't quitting. I wasn't giving up. And I'm not happy that this happened to me. I'm still mad about it. But a long time ago, I realized it wasn't going away, and it certainly wasn't getting any better. So it was up to me to try and make the best of it, which I think I did. And I did it, as we said before, I didn't do this by myself. I had a great team that, whether they know they helped me or not, they did. Just their friendship, their encouragement, all of these things to me are things that this could have really been bad. This could have been really ugly. And for a while there, it was looking like it was going to be. But again, with the support I've had and the fact that I made up my mind I was going to do this. It's funny. I made up my mind I was going to do something, and I didn't actually know what I was going to do, except I knew I was going to keep playing golf. And then once I got going, I knew I was going to try and have a positive influence on others. But that's it. That's my story.
Yeah. And it comes back to golf, right? It is your ultimate happy place. It's the place that makes all the difference in the world to you, right?
That was my first statement. I could never give back to golf what golf has given me. It would be it's an impossible debt for me to repay. It can't be done. But I try to whittle down the difference by help showing others what's possible, and that they too can. If I can do it, you can do it. And I think that in some small way helps me to pay down my debt.
Gentlemen, I can't thank you enough. It's been a real honor, and I'm so thankful to have spent the last hour with you on this episode of Musings on Golf. Happy Thanksgiving to both of you. It is a great week. It is the great American holiday. Enjoy. I know you'll be speaking to one another, if not seeing one another, very, very soon. My best to both of you. Thanks so much for joining us, Dennis Walters and Wayne Worms. It's been a real thrill.
Thanks, Kelly. Very grateful and thankful that you had us both on here. And I enjoyed myself immensely. And always great to talk to you. Let's play some golf this winter.
Absolutely. Wayne, thank you again.
Thanks, Kelly. Appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun. And have a great Thanksgiving and enjoy your life and your family.
William & Harry has entered a bold new era, led by their new Lionhead logo, a symbol of strength, leadership, and fearless ambition. Step onto the course with purpose. Outplay the field and dominate your opponent, while wearing handcrafted shoes that blend performance, luxury, and unmistakable style. William & Harry offers custom designs featuring your club, company, or organization's logo, so you stand out with every step. Visit williamandharry.com and use code 15OFFMOG for 15% off. William and Harry, walk with the lion.
Your most important shot is the one you're about to hit. And whether it's the first drive of the day, a difficult approach from a tight lie, or a bunker shot to save par, you need to know your golf ball will perform exactly the way you need it to. Superior performance on every type of shot. It's why the majority of the world's best players choose the Pro V1 or Pro V1X, and why you should too.
World Golf Hall of Fame member, PGA Hall of Fame, Bob Jones Award, PGA of America Distinguished Service Award, every single one of them earned. Every single one of them makes sense for Dennis Walters. It has been a career truly unlike any other. And what a thrill to have had him with us, along with Wayne, his dear friend. Dennis, thank you. Wayne, thank you. Wishing both of you guys a very happy Thanksgiving, and looking forward to seeing both of you during the holiday season and beyond. history made, as I mentioned, at the PGA Tour event that closed out officially the 2025 PGA Tour season. Sammy Vallamaki, first Finn to win on the PGA Tour, one-shot victory at the RSM Classic on St. Simon's Island, Georgia, over Max McGreevy. Interesting backstory. This kid, you know, from Finland, and where hockey is very popular. He was a good hockey player, but became a little better golfer. Had a mandatory 6-month military service that he had to go through. And he's only been a professional since early 2019. And he won on the DP World Tour. He decided it, well, before he won on the DP World Tour, he led Finland to the 2018 European Amateur Team Championship. So Sammy can play, and he showed what he can do, and it's tough. You know, it's challenging. There's so much on the line in that last event, but that victory propelled him to 51st in the FedEx Cup standings as the season ended, and that got him into pretty much all of the major events for 2026. So hearty congratulations to Sammy Vallamaki. Max McGreevy, who was a shot back. McGreevy made a 20-foot birdie putt on the last hole to finish second, and that got him into the top 60 in the FedEx Cup. And that got him into the events at Pebble Beach and Riviera. So he had already secured his card, the PGA Tour card for 2026, but making that 29-foot birdie putt got him a little higher opportunities, a little greater opportunities. And then, unfortunately, not really knowing, by making that putt, and then with Lee Hodges, who was playing in the same group with McGreevy, missing a putt from just under 10 feet, Hodges finished 101st on the PGA Tour, the FedEx standings. And that is right on the bubble, and he does not have. He has what is called conditional PGA Tour status, or limited access to being able to get into PGA Tour events next year for those who finish between 101 and 125. And that was tough. Another guy, Ricky Castillo, a rookie on tour, figured that he needed to shoot 62 in the final round to gain his card. Sure enough, he did. Shot 62 at St. Simon's Island. But again, because of McGreevy's putt, that knocked him to 102nd on the points list. Among others who will not be have conditional status next year on the PGA Tour, Max Homa, 105th, Tom Kim, 108, Adam Scott, 112, and Billy Horschel, 116. So the PGA Tour dropping from 125 players who automatically get their PGA Tour cards down to 100. Makes it a much more demanding tour. There are, I believe, 5 spots that are going to be available through the Q School that comes up in a week or so. So a lot of guys will be battling for those. I wanted to give you sort of a representation of what it means for those guys who come up a little bit short. Golf is an individual game. We all know that. It's a hell of a challenging game at that level where you've got to be so good. And I heard this interview with Justin Lauer. And Justin finished 120th in the FedEx Cup standings. Justin Lauer is 36 years old. He's played a little bit out on the PGA Tour. And I asked Janice to listen to this, and we talked about playing a couple of these clips from Justin. We decided to play this entire clip. It's about a minute and a half, and I felt like hearing the entirety of this paints a real picture of. What the tour means to him and where this, you know, where he is in his life right now. It's an incredible listen. Have a listen to this, please.
That's why we all play. We all want to be out here every week. As much as we complain about being out here every week, as much as we complain about the weather, as much as we complain about the travel, charters, whatever it is we complain about, we still all want to be out here playing. Like, that's all it is. That's all I want to do is be out here playing. My life is about to change dramatically in about like 3-4 months. I have twins on the way. I have no idea what to expect. So that's really all I'm thinking about right now, along with how I can improve in the game of golf and how I can prolong my career. But I'm as far as I don't know what the future holds for me. So we'll see. I don't think anyone knows what the categories will be like next year. I mean, they can give projections all they want, but you have no idea what's going to happen. So hopefully I just get to take advantage of the starts when I get them. I love it out here. I love everyone out here. I love everyone involved with the tour. Are there some people that piss me off? Yes, absolutely. There are. Are there some things that piss me off? Yes, there are. I'm human. I don't know. I don't know what else to do.
But God, I am just so mad right now. Like,
if I could have just somehow turned it around this year, but I obviously couldn't. And this game is just really hard. And I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. I'm just, I need to figure out how to get better. So.
Your game is just really hard. And it's true. It's true at all levels. It's a great game. It's hard. And that was pretty strong there from Justin Lauer. It's a great game. It's an individual game, and I always find it interesting when players talk about their team. And you know, I've got the nutritionist, and he's got the, you know, the psychological guy to help him out. But ultimately, golf's an individual game, except for Ryder Cup or President's Cup, what have you. It's an individual game. It's up to you. And I think Justin Lauer is very realistic that you've got to find a way to get better, because the PGA Tour is only going to get, it's only going to get tougher. It's only going to get maybe smaller. It already goes from 125 getting their card to 120. That's just the way it's going to be. So wishing Justin Lauer all the best with what's going on with his family and twins on the way. And something tells me he'll figure it out, but it's not easy. Again, happy Thanksgiving to everybody. It is the great American holiday. I'm lucky to be spending it with my family and friends. Please do the same. Missing Bob Bupka on this day and this week. And Janice, I know you're going to be among family and friends, and that'll be very important to you. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Look forward to next week. David Barr, who is a longtime Golf Channel and PGA Tour commentator, has done a lot of work for the PGA of America. Son of Dave Marr, who won the PGA Championship back in the 60s, will be our special guest. Until then, gobble up. Kelly Elbin, thank you, all of you, and enjoy your Thanksgiving feast from your good friends at Musings on Golf.